listening to KBOO Portland.
You know, it's crazy, like, you know, Tin Can Phone started in prison, you know, and when we came home, they kept, like, our first interviews and all of our first content in bondage. We had to start over, you know what I'm saying? We lost our mind and we lost Joe, but we gained Blue. Tin Can Phone.
Hit that time and I bounce back. Had us in the beanies, now snap back. Boys in blue trying to snap back. Trying to make sure that my guys never go back. Ain't worried about the instas in the Snapchats. I'm worried about the homies on drugs. Close to relapse. Messed up when you know the dealer and the buyer. Look him in his eyes, I can tell if he lying. Been locked up with gorillas in the lines. Yeah, respect to get you far and don't move around blind. Forget about the chow hall, ain't waiting in line. Bust down on the bed, spread with the homies. Not no more, we on the streets waiting for him. Free such and such, free with you rock. We all on cable talking it out. Me, Mike, and Blue and a couple of guests. Popping knowledge like petrol, who got the gas? Doing the work, trying to heal for my past. Politicking on the yard, trying to touch me a bag. Mike was on the yard with the hitters and the sav. Orange beanie on his head with the thing in the bag. Blue photo shoot fresh, sharp enough to cut a wrist. First day of school, cooling ain't with the cuddling. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Mike, Blue, Queens. Tin Can Phone in his mother. It's your boy, Misfit Adi, huh? Season 2, huh? Episode 2, huh? We got my partner, we got my boy, Mr. Smooth, Mr. Two Shoes, Gallery Blue. What's happening?
What's up? This is Blue here. Glad to be on Tin Can Phone Season 2. And thanks, Queez. It's always good to hear that little intro. Yeah, and yeah. I'm glad to be here. Let's see how my man Mike is doing.
I'm doing good. Yeah, the intro does make it feel like something's going on, you know. Super excited about that. Doing all right. It's like, because this is a recording, plays in the morning, but it's the evening for us. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure all our dogs are barking. But in any case, in fact, that's actually, you know, I love when I accidentally go on mission. All our dogs are barking. We all probably slaving away today, working, which is perfectly, was planned, unplanned. Today's episode is called More Than One Man. This may be our tightest ship yet. And it is interesting. We will get into what all of that means. And we have some news updates, keeping it contemporary with you all. We were reached out to by, and this is, fits into the show theme. We were reached out to a mother of a young man. I believe that he was incarcerated at 16 or something. Nice. And after it was like just in the car kind of situation, young, impressionable, book got thrown at him in Louisiana, which is also interesting, maybe as we wrap up the show talking about the law. But, you know, unkind to say the least. In any way, this young gentleman was incarcerated and the mother was going to Louisiana to support his paroling to Oregon.
Bring him and home.
Yeah, bring him home. Exactly. And so myself, Blue, and another peer supporter, Kirk, we all wrote letters of support. And I wrote as Tin Can Phone. And, you know, we just found out prior to recording, after many days of the mother being out in Louisiana, spending all the money on hotels and rental cars, they're like, ah, I'm running out of money. And then finally, it happened. Our good friend, new good friend, is returning home to Portland. Super excited about that.
Touch and go there for a while too, huh?
It really was. It really was. So exciting news, and then double exciting news. That grant that I think the last time we were recording, I was like, maybe, I don't know. But we did it. We got it. Southeast Uplift giving us money, you know, helping us be sustainable beings, but also paving the way for guests and future developments of this project, which we will just let be Easter eggy nuggets as you slowly continue to listen to our show. You guys excited about that stuff? How do you feel?
It's good to have a little bit of money in the bank.
Hey, dubs.
You know, we're going to keep going, keep doing this thing just like we were going to, but it's nice to have it, you know, supported by the community and love those people at Southeast Uplift.
I think it's good, you know, like, not that it's 100% Tin Can Phone, but when you're involved in somebody coming home from the system and things actually go their way and things actually, you know, get put in play the way that you are betting for. That's always a fantastic win because, you know, it's just so many people who, you know, that answer is no and you stuck at a shoreline or a sub-city, out of state, somewhere messed up. So, you know, even though it wasn't 100% us, anytime you have a hand in helping And that's just really all we wanted to do was help, like nothing else involved, nothing else, you know, for us was just literally to help. But, you know, another win against the system is always a good win.
Yeah.
So I'm just super excited about that.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really great and enhanced reflection, especially for me being like proximal more than really holding the experience. I felt similar. You know, the mom was like, we need stuff. Like, I need this. I don't have anywhere else to go. And it was like, if I can help by doing this, I will. And so, yeah, it was great to be able to do. But yeah, that really kind of brings it more into perspective, what it really means in their lives. Yeah.
Yeah. And this one looked like everything was lined up. It looked like we were checking off all the boxes for it. And then it hit this serious wall, you know, like yesterday. It was like, this ain't going to happen, you know, or at least it's not going to happen right now. And so many times in my experience with the system, when that roadblock comes up, it stays up. Yep. And it doesn't matter how much logic is out there, because I just realized that most of the time with DOC, I had to think about what made the most sense and realize they were going to do the opposite. Mm-hmm. And that the only place that logic operates is inside my head, not in the world. Mm-hmm. So to see, you know, like a positive outcome to that, and at least a best case scenario, because, you know, he's going to still be on parole here, mm-hmm. post-prison supervision here in Oregon, and whatever that looks like for him, we don't know. But that's a rough gig, and can be easy for some, can be difficult for some, and I guess we'll see what that's like for him, and hopefully it'll be smooth. But, you know, in Oregon, your time can be done, but your time ain't done, right? And that's it's kind of an important truth. I think a lot of people are like, oh, but you served all your time? Well, a lot of people are still serving. So hopefully we'll be able to kind of smooth not only the transition from Louisiana to here, but also once he gets here to give a little bit of support.
I know, like, where you end up when you parole plays a big part in the activities you take in, mm-hmm. you know, once you're home. So, like, for him to get here to Oregon, that alone, you feel me? Just that alone, right. With this is where his family is. I don't know if he's from here, but this is where his family yeah. is. At least this is where his mom is. That alone, just being able to say, okay, I'm here with my family, that is so comfortable compared to just thinking about getting out and you just like, I'm here, Atlanta, and I'm just here, you know? So what may seem like the smallest piece of this is really the biggest piece, because right. like the comfortability of where you parole to, and anybody that's ever been a part of the system will tell you, the decision that's made upon parole, where you go, is going to dictate how your parole is going to be, or at least how it starts off. So just him coming home and getting out of that state and being in his state and mm-hmm. being with his family, that's a win. Because now he got action. He got action now. He can move around, or he got connections. He has and forever will have 10 can phone. You right. know what I'm saying? You got action once you get here. So the biggest thing, and I think the most, like, even parole is always going to be hard. It's a tail on you. But, like, being home changes everything.
Yeah, no, that is true. It reminded me of some of the things. And yeah, that's what his mother was saying, is this is where he was raised. And so that's really coming home, as Blue mentioned. And as you said, he's got Tin Can Phone. It's like, that's an exciting part of the work we're doing. And again, thank you, Southeast Uplift and Metro Placemaking and KBOO Community Radio. Like, all of these organizations are helping us create a platform that's supporting people to come home. So that's essentially what the letter said. It's like, hey, you know, we want to pay him to do an interview, but also, you know, we are here and we have a community and we can support someone coming back. So all of those parts of it are really exciting. Yay, Tin Can Phone. Which, it's interesting. So I think this is, I will try now to link this to our show premise, More Than One Man. I think it's interesting, as Quiz mentions, like, the best chances are when you're home. And so, you know, there's more than one ways that this can turn out. And that was, I'm remembering another thing I was thinking, I slid them the gallery, our Gallery Blue contact. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, you know what I mean? But, you know, the other thing that really had something to do with it was like an angel supporter who was supporting the mother, as well as the mother, you know, I was talking to our supporter and she said that she gave 10% and the mom gave 110. And so those kinds of things are what influence the outcome. But also those kinds of things are what help, I think, people be more than what the system thinks is going to happen. And so to that, we have an exciting thing to delve into. So, Quiz, knows Gallery Blue exists, in fact, is super hype about Gallery Blue, as we just heard in the intro to the show. But we had a very interesting event occur earlier this week where it was interesting because you had the photo of it, and I was like, oh, weird. Like, who has a photo of this? If the building's closed, like, I have a photo. Like, how? And maybe I even sent it to you, but then you were like, this is the thing. And then you're like, this is not cool. It's in the PO office. So then Blue and I were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What do we do? And so we called each other. I called you, but I guess I'll hand the story off. What was happening? So now you can tell Blue, because Blue has no idea what happened.
Hey, no. So I've always known Gallery Blue exists. Like, I've always known, you know, Gallery Blue is our brother. Like, it's always been a partnership. But I guess I just never knew. Like, you explained the project to me a couple times, right? I knew that Gallery Blue / Tin Can Phone did work at the PO office. I just never knew what that work was. You know what I'm saying? And I never really cared. Like, as long as we out there. Because understanding, you know, what the project means now, you know, I get it. But at the time, I'm at work, you feel me? So one of my partners just hit me he hit me and was just like, hey, it's pictures of you at the PO office. And I'm vague just like that. So I'm like, pictures of me at the PO office? I'm like, what you mean? And he sent them to me. He sent me those pictures.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and they looked it for me. I'm like, these is the pictures Mike did. Like, I remember the pictures. I just thought that you said you did some stuff with some kids. You know what I'm saying? And was using that in presentation. I remember all that. So, but upon him hitting me, PO office, and it's just like, you know, this is where the trauma kicked in. Like, you got to understand, I'm a road runner. I'm a dodger of the can. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's always been me against the system. So anytime it's got something to do with POs, like, especially experiencing going to jail from PO offices, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've been that dude who, okay, I might have a warrant, but might not. I'm going to just go see my PO and find out and then go to jail. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think people understand the trauma of going to jail from the PO office. It's different if the police get you in traffic and your PO say, okay, lock them up, or, you know, because you know you was in traffic and you did something to get pulled over. But when you go to the office and they take you on some stuff that you really feel like wasn't worthy, that's a trauma that carries along with you. Like, I my stomach sway. Like, I always show my PO when I go in there, like, boy, I'm nervous, you feel me? Like, and I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. Like, I'm doing everything right, and my stomach still won't stop sweating, you know what I'm saying? Because I done been a gel up out of here before, you know what I'm saying? So anytime it has to do with the system and pee on my picture, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't, and then, like, for the homie, he like, yeah, like, you know, this in the hallways, woo doo wow wow wow. I'm like, what? I'm like, oh, no. You feel me? So that's why I hit you, like, what? And this is before the pictures were sent, actually. You know what I'm saying? And then he sent the pictures. That's when I sent them, like, I'm like, what the? I'm like, what? You know what I'm saying? But then when you call and you explain it, I'm like, like, you told me all of this. You feel me? Like, you told me all of this, but I guess I just missed the PO part. Like, I missed that part. And then a small percentage was like, you know, I am the streets. You feel me? Like, I'm knee deep in this, as far as being connected with every, you know? So, like, going in the PO office and it's just like pictures of me in the PO office. Like, hold on. Like, that's never, like, that don't even sit right. Like, you couldn't even tell somebody that, you know what I'm saying? And them believe it. Like, quiz? Like, nah, bro. You tripping, you feel me? So just a small part of it was like, I'm like, how many motherfuckers done went up in here and seen me? Like, how many motherfuckers think, you feel me? Like, I don't, you feel me? Because if I go in there and I see pictures of niggas, hey, they, y'all working with the POs, period. Like, even if I heard about 10 Can Phone and how I had to break it down, like, with Gallery Blue, 10 Can Phone, the whole projects, for me, it's still like, you working with the police, boy. Like, and that's always going to be my thought. But, you know, like, that's where trauma almost won. Because after you talked to me and you was able to explain it, and it's like more than one man, like, these POs need to, what's up, Papa? All right. You know, the POs, like, we the guys that, we're their job security. You know what I'm saying? So they are kind of in control of our life. We're handed, you know, convict leasing. We're handed from the jail to the POs. We work for the jail, then we work for them. But that's a joke. But otherwise, like, you know, so, like, the importance of the project, though, is they violate us for some of the smallest stuff sometimes. They have the say and the right to send us to jail whenever they want. They could tell us where to live at. So they need to see the other side of us. They need to see, like, you know, the picture with my daughter, the picture, you know, they need to see that work. Like, I've been working since I've been home. I never stopped working through everything that was going on. Never stopped working, never stopped, you know, doing what I was supposed to do. But for them, they may think, like, you know, whatever they think, because they don't really see a person, they see the area. You know what I'm saying? So when you go into them offices, everybody think it's personal. Like, he's got this personal vendetta against me, when really he got a personal vendetta with where you from. You know what I'm saying? And the motherfuckers that come from where you came from before you. You know what I'm saying? So they don't really, and I understand that about parole. Like, they don't really see, hey, can I get one of his pacifiers? They don't really see the human. They just see what area code you come from. Like, they see what area you from. So, you know, but like me hitting my bro back and like, hey, bro, look, this is what the move is. Like, this is what it is. You feel me? He like, that's a good move. Like, I respect, you know, what y'all doing. I respect. He see my brother Ben. Rest in peace, my brother Ben. He see my brother Ben. Peace up there. He like, yeah, bro. Like, I really feel like I know what's up. So, you know, my first mind was like, oh, everybody going to think this, or people might think this. You feel me? But ultimately, motherfuckers really seeing it is like, bro, I respect what you're doing. Like, that's a good move. Like, they need to know, like, we bigger than just inmates. So, you know, and it worked out into, like, a great plan, because now, you know, that's the one place people I know, everybody I know, the one thing they got in common, they going to be in that PO office. It's sad to say. It's sad to say, but everybody I know and the people that I associate with, unfortunately, you know, the one thing they got in common is going to be in that PO office. What is that? So yeah, and that was just that story.
I mean, I think that's amazing, and I'm gonna toss it over to you, Blue, in a second. But for those of you who are not on the video, Queez is currently putting a pacifier in his son's mouth, right? So, is like, this is that's more of the story than I even heard the first time, because I'm on the phone with him at his job. The machines are running in the background. And I mean, honestly, I was worried that I had done something that I shouldn't have done. And so, you know, was making sure that I had communicated even before, you know, was hoping that I had, but was concerned that I hadn't. Anyway, Blue, what was that story for you?
Yeah, man, that was like amazing to hear, especially like experiencing it through my side. And then also like my lens on that whole project, because I had so many thoughts about like entering into that sort of system. But when Queez said, you know, you can go in there doing everything right and feel like everything could go wrong, I mean, that is intense, you know, like that feeling just of dread. And, you know, like when people, maybe the average person is driven by a police car and been doing everything right, and still that feeling, just like multiply that kind of like oppressive sense of like, I don't know, dread that you feel when you're driving around traffic. And multiply that by 1,000, because they might take your liberty. They might lock you up. They might put you in a box and be like, hey, you know, you messed up. You're like, I did, you know, or no, I didn't. Or yeah, maybe I did. You know, you just never know. And it's like terrifying. But I know that when we got that text from Queez, and I could see he was upset and just trying to like figure out what happened. It was a question, you know, it was like, what's going on? Like, how'd this happen? And I was like, oh, I was like, Mike got this. And mm-hmm. But one thing I knew is like, we have deep ties, man. Like, mm-hmm. And I say just about Queez and Mike, like they have like been in it with each other. And there's a relationship there, like that people aren't going to be able to discern from, you know, listening to a show, but it's deep. Mm-hmm. You know, so many of my experiences with Michael, like our art, was like going out and getting food, you know, and just like doing everyday things and experiencing it together and taking a selfie of that experience. And that's part of what Mike's practice is like being involved in a person's creativity and also like their life and like experiencing stuff. So I was like, man, I go, I know Queez and I know Mike, and they're gonna just like walk through this.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, man, if this wasn't that relationship, I was like, this could go real bad. Like, yeah. Like I was a little afraid, you know, but I did also have some peace, because I thought they're going to talk this through.
Mm-hmm.
And Queez knows Mike.
Facts. Like, you got to understand, just for some context for our listeners, like, there's not too many people that like you really could just depend on. You know what I'm saying? So like you gotta think, and I always tell people this, I've seen people who were married go to prison and get divorced. You know what I'm saying? I've seen people get married in prison and get divorced. But I say that to say, like, not even wives could show up for husbands as much as that's needed in those situations. So when you got a person like Michael who, like, this what we doing, 10 Can Phone is created, I'm here. Y'all finna do the work, though. Now, mind you, he always made me do the work. This is where he gained my respect. You know what I'm saying? It's because he always made me do the work in the sense of like, he didn't baby us because we was in there. He gave us a list of the stuff we needed to do. And this is what needs to be done by the time he came back in order for the show to be successful. I got this part, y'all get this part, right? But there was never a time where I was like, man, is Michael gonna come? Like, we was dressing, we was ready to go because we knew he was coming. And when he didn't come, I promise you, bro, I'm not making this up. When he didn't come, man, he would fucking come and like real quick, like, hey, I gotta go to this meeting, or I gotta go do this, I gotta go do that, but I'm just here to let y'all know. Like, bro, you ain't gotta do that. You ain't gotta show up to let us know you not finna, you feel me? Like,
when you, 'cause you don't got no cell phones, man. Text doesn't work. You gotta go do that FaceTime.
Yeah, but people don't be considerate like that, though. Like, y'all a beater. Y'all a beater. You feel me? I'll see y'all next time. That'd be the mindset of certain, you feel me? Sure. So, like, when you come and you show up, like, these is talks me, Armand, Joe, my boy BG, like, these is talks we had, like, bro. Like you gotta understand even deeper than that. Me and Michael done got to the point of yelling, cussing at each. I don't know if he cussed at me, but we done got to that point to where my girl had to like, baby, he only talking to you like that because he care. She like, all I can hear is somebody who care about you. And once you come to that recognition, like, this shit is deeper than, we can never do 10 Can Phone again. I'ma bang his line. You know what I'm saying? We can never do no projects again. He forever gonna be my brother. You know what I'm saying? Because it's he put the footwork in. Like, he came in the trenches. Mike came in the trenches. I don't know if he knew what he was signing up for. I always tell him that. I don't know if you knew what you were signing up for, but we are dysfunctional. We have mental health. We are trauma-filled individuals. And you just came in and you know, you kind of gave us your life. You gave us space in your life and kind of allowed us to take over the direction. You know what I'm saying? I hear you, Papa.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I remember you saying that, and I feel like in a way I knew that I didn't know, but I knew what I needed to know to be in at least the position, and like all of the different positions as I experienced them are like I'm navigating them for the first time in some ways. But yeah, I think it's interesting too, because on the outside a lot of people are like, oh, how did you get into that? And I think I describe it in a way where like, you can just go, like you can go. And it's interesting too, because sometimes there's people who are proximal and they like want it or are near it, but it's not uncommon for people to feel like they need to like abandon it or leaving it behind because something weird is happening. And, you know, and it may not, you know, it's just like, maybe they're just uncomfortable for whatever reason, but it gets hard. Or I think for me, part of it in a particular sense is also that given what I've experienced, I don't really know how to, what it would mean to, it's kind of like a war front that's inside of our nation. It's like a civil war or something. I recently was talking about my trip to Standing Rock and someone asked if it felt like a civil war. And it's like, yeah, I mean, yes, I was on American soil while people pointed big guns at me. And so this is kind of like, you know, like an oppression-based refugee crisis kind of situation that, you know, exists and persists. And so again, is hard to turn a back on, but also it's like wonderful. Like we were able to welcome a brother back to Oregon by, you know, creating a brotherliness. One of the things I wanted to ask Blue was as you said, like, I think there was kind of a challenge and discomfort in working in the context. That being said, a lot of the way that you showed up to that project and making suggestions about how to develop the work was also imagining the experience of the person going through the thing. And so now that you've heard that, how did that land for you?
Absolutely. I was going to comment on that. Thanks, Michael. It's amazing to hear about somebody seeing it, because for so long, that gallery, this work that we've created and curated has not been viewed, right? Like it's been closed. Like the POs have shown that in so many ways they're obsolete, right? Like for a year, they didn't have to see most people in person. And now they're bringing people back down to the office. And it's like, for what? But for whatever reason, they're bringing people down. We really wanted to transform that space. Like, we wanted to, like, usurp that space, take it over. Like, we wanted to make it something different. And to hear about, you know, one of Queez's friends going in there and kind of seeing this, and actually that's like this portal through, like, it's like this new experience that he's never had of the PO office. And then he gets to have this conversation with Queez, and that changes his next time that he walks through those walls. The next time he's in there, not only does he have a friend in there, but he also knows why. And those frames, they are built, you know, from like beat up, torn up, reclaimed wood. That's beautiful. And that's all, everything we put in there was meant to kind of like lift up the men and women who have to walk through those halls, like change the conversation, change the story. And right across from what Queez is talking about, his, that piece that Michael did showing Queez as not just one man, is all these like pieces of art that I created that have wrongfully convicted people's words like pasted into them. And Michael and I actually got to talk to one of the POs, and she's like, oh, I really like this one the best. This picture that you can clearly read the words of like Steve Biko's like biography. And I mean, it's like, has these lists of people who have died in South African prisons, you know? It's like the story of like Steve Biko's activism and death and like his ability to affect change as just like a voice, you know, despite being incarcerated, being able to sort of change an entire sort of culture, or at least be a part of that change. And that was what it was about. Like, what is the conversation we're starting? And I just think it's so interesting. Like, at first glance, like somebody can look at my work in there and they can say, oh, this person's working with the POs. And like, I had to be open to that, right? Like, I thought about it myself. I thought it was ironic. What, am I really gonna do work in the PO's office? Is Michael gonna do work with me in the PO's office? That's so weird, like me? And then we chose what to put in there, right? And we have stuff in every room. And we've talked about this maybe in the last segment a little bit, but all that work, you know, the sacred geometry is meant to connect like a person walking through those halls with that plan, that like larger sort of design in our lives, even if we may not have any ability to see it, especially when you're walking through a PO's office. So to hear one person's story is, you know, for every one story, and this maybe is going to be a part of our next discussion when we talk about Senate Bill 1511, but for every one story, that's like the tip of the iceberg, right? How many people walked through and had an experience, and what was that experience? You know, what did it look like?
Some interesting things you brought up. I realized that the frame where yours piece is at, Queez, I put it right next to the vending machine. And so you don't even have to go to, you don't pass it unless you go to the vending machine. If you go into the PO room, you don't pass it. So it's the spot. And it's also at the end of the hall where you see all the blue stuff. So it's in the primo spot. It's next to the Jet Set original. The other thing I was going to say is that Blue and I also put artwork, and also all those pieces that Blue was talking about, we put them all in the individual PO meeting rooms. So the individual room where like people are like meeting with their PO, there's a sick piece of Blue artwork right there.
Hey, that's dope. And think about this. Never in history have you heard of anybody saying they walked through the PO office, stopped and pulled their phone out to take a picture of anything.
You know what's also crazy is when we were doing it, when we were doing it, they were fighting us. They were like, can you just paint a pretty picture? And we're like, I'm characterizing it extremely. Yeah. You know, yeah. I think even a part of the conversation later was like, we could have just painted a huge mural. Like, we went through this effort so we can incorporate other people, mm-hmm. so that other people, and like part of it was that when people are walking through, we can invite them to be a part of the museum in the future. But also it was like similar to Tin Can Phone, if it's just a one-time thing, we lose the platform, and it's the platform that can also support guys in the future, like all this stuff. And, you know, I think they, Regional Art and Culture Council, they really worked with us. Originally, Peg, and then Salvador and Keith, they really learned what the project was about and continued to support us to be able to really do something special there. So all those things are really exciting. Are you gonna say something, Blue?
Just to add, like, they listened to us, you know, like, and it was hard because it was coming from such a different context. Just like people out there are gonna maybe listen to what we're saying tonight and have a different experience of something. Like, we had to really, like, share, like, what this experience was, like, what it was like even just to be on parole or go into that office, and or why we wanted to make the stuff we wanted to make. One of the things they said is, well, we can just buy frames. That was one of the things they said to us. We'll just buy frames. We're like, we got this idea. This is, there's levels to this. This is, there's levels to this, just like there's levels to Michael, and there's levels to Queez and to me. And like, there's thought behind every piece in that gallery and behind every aspect of that installation. And I think it was beautiful how they kind of like gave us that sort of space to share like real stories, real life stuff, and reasoning behind our choices, and just kind of adopted them and heard. It was really quite powerful, actually. So thanks for sharing that about your friend too, Queez. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think it's important to, like, I got a real lesson out of that, because instantly I thought about judgment. Instantly I thought about, like, it was really, like, relapse time for me. So, like, together as I always think it, I have it, or you know, it may be presented that I have it just because of the sharp things that I say sometimes. Like, relapse is right around the corner. You know what I'm saying? And relapse is way bigger than drugs. Like, it's a lot more than drugs, especially for, like, when you come from out that lifestyle. So I think the biggest lesson for me is, like, for dudes to go in there and see, like, I don't got nothing to worry about. You know what I'm saying? Like, it would never be no Queez working with the police, working with the POs, working with, like, that. So with me having that comfort and that understanding, no matter what projects we decide to do, I don't got to worry about what dudes think, because it'll never be, you know? It's just when the actions are faulty, then you got to worry about what people think, because it's always going to be explanation. When you see us in there, then it should be an appreciation that you know where I come from. You know the gutter that I climbed out of and the traumas that I left behind to get to where I'm at. So to see us up in there and know, you got to always know that it's for the convicts. You got to always know that it's for the ones in blue. You know what I'm saying? Like, no matter what move we make, it's always for them. It's always for us. Like, it's always been that. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I had to come over my own fear. And one thing that I always say is, like, you know, the one thing we battle is our reputation. You know what I'm saying? Reputation get us in trouble because we continue to try to be that. We continue, like, what people say about us, like, oh, Queez is this, Queez is that, Queez is this. I start living into that. Like, I got to act like this because that's what they think. You know, my reputation is what I would battle. So climbing out of that, you know, it's like, it's cool. When you see me or you see anything I'm involved in, then you know, like, you feel me, it's for the people. It's right. For the other side. You know what I'm saying?
You're building a reputation. You're more than just one man, baby. Almost one. We are just philosophers. So I want to give you a quick tour of Gallery Blue. So this is, you can see, so this is the process, and I'm going to go quick, but so this is, we looked at the wood, right? And it was all kind of messed up. It was old crusty wood, and it was from this church on MLK over here. And then we milled the wood. This is Blue working hard here. And then we made our first prototype frame, and then we met with Keith, and he was like, good, and here's how to improve. And we're like, yeah, so we got more wood, and then we, like, had to mill all this wood down, and, like, again, you know,
take out all the nails,
yeah, we had to denail them, we had to mill all this stuff, and then we started making cuts, and then we started making frames. So this is the frame, you know, then once we put them all together, so we had a stack of frames. So then let's do the install. So then
let me quickly add, like, any problems with the wood, chunks out of them, holes in them, we didn't, like, cut those pieces out to make a more perfect frame. We actually sought out those portions of the wood, and we kept those as a part of the frame. We wanted those imperfections, we wanted those dings and cuts and chunks.
And you've been watching Queez, so this is, you saw them come in to the parole office, all those frames, that's you right there framed up. Blue, I was telling Queez that I used the blue tape just like they would in prison.
Oh, God.
And they were like, oh, you don't want to make it look tight? I'm like, nah, these are temporary. These are queases, you know? Yeah. You getting these? And so this is Blue hanging up his big guys. We had pizza for lunch. But then, so now what Blue's saying is this kind of like epic pantheon of this Phoenix over here. And you're up next to the Jet Set. Got the Jet Set next to the staff only. So anyway, so this is what it looks like, you know, in the lobby right here. And so now we're going to give you the proper tour. So this is an M. Lawrence piece. It's with the piece with Ben. Do you want to say anything about this, Blue?
I just think it's a beautiful painting. It's kind of like surreal. He's a cool artist and wasn't really doing art once he got released. And he's kind of he's magic, you know, but we were able to pay him and he made a piece of art for us. So that was pretty cool.
And we reference our brother Ben many times on this show. We paid Ben to be a part of the show. And before he was able to do something for the project, because it was a long time coming, he passed away. And so this is the piece in the front lobby. This is a photo of him with this quote, "Even precious friendships are underground as acts of love and resistance. It has been my community that is holding me up and sharing their nutrients with me. People have stepped up and made me feel loved and even more connected to my forest, even though they are so far away." This is an excerpt from a letter that he wrote while inside. And then this is the plaque that goes next to it. "Ben is a poet and scholar in his own right. He learned his way with words while being incarcerated for 22 years at various Oregon penal institutions. During this time, Ben amassed an epic compendium of words and writings in the form of essays, poems, and personal letters. Ben was released from his 22-year sentence in April during COVID-19. During preparation for this show, Ben was invited to participate and was excited to have a creative project to occupy him. Before we were able to receive his submission, Ben passed away, taken before his time, like many who come home after being incarcerated. Benjamin Hall was a peer, friend, mentor, brother, and son." So that's the Ben piece. We got this sick Alan.
I said, rest in peace to my brother.
R.I.P. Ben. We got an Alan King, currently incarcerated artist, mailed us this piece. We got a Kirk Charlton, who we'll have on the show this season. Amazing, beautiful Kirk Charlton. We got a Sal, who was someone who was a part of the community of that parole office. And so is doing a lot of work in his own community, working with kids. So he made a piece. We got a Piper, and then that's you. So we got Quiz Adi next to the vending machine. More than one man drawing of you in your work outfit, in your prison blues, and holding your daughter Jayla. And this is what it says: "Quiz Adi is a hardworking musician and father, working with peers Armand and Joe. Quiz collaborated to create a podcast project that they have begun recording inside Columbia River Correctional Institution." So that's what it says. And you're right next to Jet Set, Suspended in Time. So yeah, we got a Reggie Pratt, who's also an incarcerated artist, currently incarcerated artist, who sent us work. And then we'll
just to go pick that up at in Salem, which was interesting.
The artwork from Salem?
Yeah, I had to go walk into the prison and go up to the desk, and they handed me a box that was waiting for me.
You want to know something crazy?
Tell me.
If you take a shirt from prison, the inmate blue shirt, and you can sell it on the internet for like $500, $600, you know what I'm saying? Close to $1,000. You get the whole outfit, at least $3,000 for the whole prison outfit. So for you to walk up to the prison, walk in there, get some work up out of there, it's contraband. But you know, think about like just, and even for you too, Michael, like when y'all just, you know, like for the work and for just for even like you said, the guys that's incarcerated now and their work to be shown, this was one of the things that tied me to Tin Can Phone, because you was like, before it was Tin Can Phone, we was just Arts and Social, and we was doing that one project with Ben, the Wall, and Larry Lofton, shouts out my boys. And you was like, yeah, it's going to the streets. It's going to be in the gallery. People's going to actually see it. Like, that just blew my mind. Like, we finna do something here, and the people in the streets going to see it? That's crazy. So now to be on this end and to see that same work is being put in for other guys, I just must say, like, it is really, like, you know, touching. It's real. Like, I was even thinking, talking to, you know, one of my partners, I'm like, 10 Can Phone is at a place now where close people in my life has been paid to participate on the show. You know what I'm saying? To where we was talking about stripping the blues and trying to come up with a theme song and just thinking about all the work that it took in. And you already know how much I praise you for that, for the work you put in, Mike. But to think, like, at this moment now, today, my close people, you know, have put money in their pocket to participate with our show. And that's heavy for me because, you know, I come from, huh, here go this sack, here go this pistol, bro. Like, you know, it's time to get right, bro. Like, you know, you're going to take this corner. And that's how I used to get my people paid. So even though it's not, you know, a large amount, you know, to the ones close to me, that's like significant to them because they like, bro, this is literally just to tell our story. Like, you literally created something to get it and helped us, like, got us paid just to create our story. That's what 10 Can Phone, and that's why people would be tied to us, bro. Because, like, even Hef, like, I don't need no money. Like, tell me when to show up and I'm coming. You know what I'm saying? But, like, to, like, nah, bro, you know, with 10 Can Phone, we're not going to have you do nothing for free. If we can, we going. He like, bro, it's different. He like, so many people try to interview me because of his music. So many people try to interview me, but ain't nobody really talked about a price shit like that. Like, they not, he like, I do it for you because you my brother. Like, 10 Can Phone, you know, he's been tied with us. So, you know, just to get people that I love and people close to me and be able to be like, hey, come tell your story, bro. Like, people need to hear this. And to get them paid, like, this shit here is epic. This is epic. This is what people really hustle and, like, music and all the different things people do is, you know, to help the motherfuckers around them. And even though, like I said, we're not changing lives with it, but, you know, I don't have to hand nobody no sack. I don't have to hand nobody no gun. I don't got to set up no lick. You feel me? I don't got to do none of that. Like, my people could really, you know, just see some money for simply being they self and just, you know, coming and spending time with us. And to create that in prison, like, that's more than a, you know? So 10 Can Phone, like, this is really special. Like, 10 Can Phone is really a special project. And I think we all knew it from the beginning. Michael just had to get us in shape. You know, you took a bunch of misfits.
It was your name when you introduced yourself to me, Misfit. I'm like, all right, well, let's get it ready. I mean, you couldn't have said it better in a real way where I couldn't say it. But I think even hearing it for the first time in this way is really powerful. I think not just for me, but also for people who are listening and people who support the project. Again, Southeast Uplift, Metro, KBOO, you know, all of these entities were helping me move the ball forward. And I think what you said about, you know, glad Blue mentioned going to Salem, and because we said some of those similar things, we don't know how much it's permeating to the admin team, but like for you to really contextualize it, I mean, that's kind of what we've been selling. And something Blue said from the beginning is when you're inside and people are like, yeah, we'll show your work on the outside, like they can't trust it, they have no idea, they're just sending artwork out into the ether. And so we're really creating these platforms for folks. We're getting them money. We're changing narratives. All that is super exciting to hear. That was, oh man, the idea keeps coming in and out of my head. Gallery Blue, money, I don't know. Blue, fill the space.
Yeah, I just want to share, like, you never know when you're changing somebody's, like, experience, right? Or their world or their life. And I remember the first time that I got money for doing my work, art, you know, for doing art on the outside. And, think of the hours that we dedicate, Queez, when you're just like, when you got nothing and all you have is time and you're just trying to figure out, how do I do something? Like, how do I, like, take this thing that's inside and turn it into a song or turn it into a piece of work? Mm-hmm. And maybe nobody's ever going to hear it, right? Like, you know, that's the truth, right? Maybe you think like it's going to get out there. But so I remember when somebody handed me money, real money, for doing art that I spent years from dusk till dawn, like, working to be proficient at, you know, to work in different skills and mediums. And I mean, that was like, oh, this is real. Like, this is like part of the dream. Like, I'm going to be able to put this into action. And, you know, then you believe, right? Then you can live the dream. Like, not like when people on the inside always say, like, living the dream. Like, and you know what I mean? It's like the most cliche thing you can hear in prison is living the dream. How are you doing today? Living the dream, you know? Yeah. But out here, like, you start to get paid for something you love instead of, like, scraping paint off a tugboat or something.
Like, and that's subversive for, like, life. forget about being incarcerated, getting paid to do what you love. The thing I remembered from, also inspired from what both of you were saying, what Quiz was saying about you never see the work coming out. When we were talking about the project, we were like, so we were getting ready to get interviewed, and the person was like, yeah, I think I maybe casually said like, yeah, it's never been done before. And she's like, yeah, I Googled it. And I was like, I didn't even know, but I knew. You know what I mean? Like, it's just never been done before. It's the only place on the universe that's an incarcerated men only gallery, wherever it is, but particularly in a PO office. It's like two universes colliding that have never been seen. Like, this is a new molecular formation on the space-time continuum.
Yeah. No, that's heavy as f- I ain't even gonna lie. Like, that's an invasion of that, because you know that's they all, they probably be talking shit about us and all type of shit. And when we go in there, y'all hang them pictures up and they get to see, like, dang, these are real humans. Like, if that don't make you, you feel me? Like, that gotta make you like, dang, like, all right, let me get this dude a chance. So you just, you know, in so many ways, you never know how you changing somebody's, you know, life or how you changing somebody's, but it's being seen for sure. Like, I'm just being tied to, like I said, being tied to the community and being tied to the streets. Like, this was the first time that it was me. But like, you gotta understand, like, when I'm talking to motherfuckers, talking to people, like, the projects that we doing, the things we doing, like, I'm bringing it up, and the project has been seen. My picture just wasn't seen, but like, it was being talks about the pictures in the PO office. Mind you, we're talking about pictures in the PO office, and I never knew it was our pictures. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, it's interesting.
So when I'm having conversations prior to knowing it was us, people telling me, like, right. Yeah, they got the little pictures in there, because the PO office is just now opening up. So everybody's contacting, you know, because we got our own underground contact of who got what PO and what PO attitude is what and how they acting since the doors is opening back up. But in those talks, it talks about the pictures in the PO office. I can't speak on it because I don't know. I'm like, I don't really know. But it's multiple people telling me, you know, about the rearrangement of the PO office. So all this time later, when he get at me, like, you know, this is you, it all come
right
full circle. So yeah, don't, like, it's being seen. Mind you, everybody's going to see their POs now. So it's being talked about. People, you know, Ben, he's a legend in where we come from and all those different things. But yeah, man, like, it's special. It's a special program, and I don't know, man. I got high hopes for this. Like, this shit, like, it makes me feel like, you know, it makes me feel like, I feel like they sell our trauma. You know what I'm saying? I feel like it's so many people right now that sell our trauma, but nobody's really for the solutions. Like, everybody, you got to think about this. I mean, it might be off subject a little bit, but even record labels, when they sign these deals, have y'all ever noticed that every rapper's story is the same no matter where they come from? But then they get exposed years later for, like, living in the suburbs or wherever they live at. But the record labels, our trauma is so marketable now.
Oh, yeah.
That record labels is creating characters. You know what I'm saying? Record labels in different play, like, they're creating the super, oh, my dad wasn't there, mom was on crack. Like, the story that people are really going through, they create these stories for these guys who never lived it, then they sell these records. And so what I'm saying is, Lil Durk, Rahway, like, they have a theme right now saying rich off pain. Like, they literally figured out a way to sell our pain and sell our trauma and make riches off of it. Tin Can Phone, Gallery Blue, you got to understand, we just now seeing money. You know what I'm saying? So for any of our listeners or any of our supporters who may think that because we speak highly of the money and we're so happy about the money, you have to understand that the money has just now started coming. You know what I'm saying? Like, this project, and I'm talking about the stresses, this is the easiest it's been. It's even recorded. Like, the stresses and the headaches and the head bumps and the intoxications and the courts and the rehabs and the moving, like, all this happened before the money.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? All this happened before the money. So, like, we most definitely do this for the love of the people. Like, we, you know, we express our pain, we express our traumas, but Tin Can Phone is a place that, you know, we look for a solution. And I feel like that's bigger than a lot of programs. A lot of programs is prison reform, and when you come home from prison, we're gonna help you and all these different things, and they get this funding behind it. But ultimately, there really don't be no solution to really help guys. Like, Tin Can Phone is really in the trenches helping people. So, you know, just for context to understand, like, this shit's really deep with us, Michael. Like, you done been knee deep in the trenches with the addicts trying to pull your friends out the gutter to get them in rehab. You know what I'm saying? Like, Michael, like, you know? So, like, 10 Can Phone is one of those projects that I feel like it helps me. It's therapy. It's the only reason why I haven't really, like, I haven't had to step and rush into therapy, because I know when we record, I know when I talk to y'all that y'all need me to tell my truth. Y'all need me to tell this side of the story, because, you know, it may help somebody in the world. It may not, but, like, it's really therapy to understand, like, y'all feel me and y'all witness. Blue, you been there. You walked that road. You walked that yard. Michael, you walked that yard as a witness, but you was a witness for the defense, though. You wasn't with the prosecutors. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You was in the field. You wasn't in the house. You know what I'm saying? You was with the runaway. So I just say all that to say, man, the importance of this program and the reason for our listeners, like, man, change your perspective. Change what you think about, like, it. Challenge what you've been to believe about the Boys in Blue, inmates, monsters, whatever they call them, like, more than one man. Like, you got to understand, anybody who's ever been to prison, anybody who's done time, it isn't because of who they were. It was an action that they created. You know what I'm saying? It was an action that they did, that they committed. You know what I'm saying? So for you to just type on the internet, see their name, and see whatever crime that was committed of, and say that that's who this person is, you really have to understand that nobody is born an inmate. Nobody's born convicted. You know what I'm saying? You go through things in life, you grow up a certain way, you make decisions, and one decision could put you away forever. And that's what I mean by 60 seconds off could cost you a lifetime. 60 seconds off your dean, it could cost you life in prison. It could cost you murder. It could cost you your life. So just, you know, it's humans. They made mistakes and they got convicted of it, but that's not who them people are. Some of these guys are artists. Some of these guys are fathers. Some of these guys are brothers. Some of these guys are sons, mother. Like, you know, like, look at who the person is. And if you take anything from 10 Can Phone, take any host that's ever hosted 10 Can Phone. None of us come from the same thing. And we all found a way to make space in this beautiful place.
I love it. I had thoughts, but really Queez brought it home. More than one man. When he went back to more than one man, I was like, this man is a surgeon. He's suturing it right back up. Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say when you brought up that you were helping people and they were getting paid through this work. I was like, I was just going to be like, Queez, more than one man. He's like, you know, Robin Hoodian status now, doing the right thing, being seen by the people, robbing the riches to the poor. I love it. Killed this show. Blue, you want to bring us in on the latest for the SB, whatever those scientific machine numbers are?
Yeah, I'll roll into that, but I just want to say also, like, it's okay to love Queez when you're listening to this. It's okay to, like, love that guy and be like, man, he just blew it up with some knowledge. And I think not just one man also is about, like, I've seen a lot of people. Queez, you are extraordinary. You are. But you're not alone in being extraordinary. And if you give people who are coming out of that context that of incarceration the chance to show you that aspect of themselves that is amazing, right? That has been reading books for 20 years or playing 20 games of chess for 10 years or doing whatever it is, there is something beautiful that can come out of an ugly, difficult, horrible place. And the more that the community says, yeah, we see you and we want you as a part of this, as opposed to a separate thing, the more we restore people and, like, bring them in, like what Michael does. And I think in my experience, what a lot of Portland does, the more you're going to be able to get to see that, to see the beauty. And it's pretty cool if you're willing to open yourselves up to that. And I think it's true of all people, right? It's true of all people, but not all people may carry something that you may be afraid of, right? And it's cool to know that somebody's walking down the street and that person could be the best guitarist you've ever known. You don't even know it unless they pick up a guitar. And like, give people the opportunity to shine, you know? With Senate Bill 1511, which we talked about a little bit last week, this is a bill that was being worked on in committee, is designed to try to bring people who have a known non-unanimous jury and can prove it, and it has to be like a polled jury has to be clear. The legislature was trying to take this on because nobody has done the right thing. The courts haven't yet done the right thing, even though they're going to hear a case soon and maybe make a ruling in the Oregon Supreme Court in the next year. Ellen Rosenblum, the AG of Oregon, could overturn those cases and decide whether they want to retry people or cut them loose. So they had this bill and they were working on it and it went into committee. And I think the bill was really suffering. There were people that were saying, no, don't do this. Somebody hurt me. And this is bad. You know, it doesn't matter that it comes from racism. It doesn't matter that it's disproportionately affect people of color, because I've been hurt. And it's true, right? Like there are people that have been hurt and are suffering and that things like this, when you try to make something right, maybe aren't always easy, you know? The civil rights movement, like I've been talking to people about this, it's like, that wasn't easy for people. It wasn't easy for people to like wrap their minds around how to try to bring equity into our society when they were doing crosstown busing in Boston or integrating the schools in Alabama. But things are not always gonna be easy, you know? Sometimes you gotta do what's right. So the good thing is the bill's not dead. The bad thing is that through some sort of legislative calculus, they've removed people who are not currently in custody, meaning they're actually in prison, convicted by non-unanimous juries. So we still want to vote yes on Senate Bill 1511. We still want the legislators to get behind this, but they've taken out an entire group of people who may have already served their time, you know, behind walls, you know, shackled, locked up, but are out, right? They've said that those people aren't going to be covered by this. So anybody who's already served their time but may be on parole or may carry the stigma of a conviction is not going to be helped by this. So that's really...
That seems almost counterintuitive.
It does to me. I think I said it on the top of the show. It's like you try to figure out what the most logical thing is and do the opposite, right? And it could be that they've decided to sever those two things to simplify, right? You're going to cut down the number of cases.
Right.
And then they'll address that later. That's part of the discussion. But to me, it's like, yeah, I mean, help the people who are locked up. Help the people who are locked up for sure. But what sort of like power or fear or argument is going on to make them say, oh, yeah, but you know what? These other people, you know, even if something unconstitutional happened to them, let's just let them sit on it. And,
yeah.
And the other thing is like that iceberg. I mean, this is only touching the tip of the iceberg. There are so many people that are never going to be able to get justice from this. I mean, probably a lot of people from Queez's neighborhood and area code, like he was talking about, that don't even know that they had a non-unanimous jury or took a plea because somebody said, really? We just need these 10 white people to find you guilty. The two people who are of color on that jury, if there are two people, we're slicing that off. We're taking that off the table. So it's sad to me, like it affects me personally too, but it was difficult to see that they were gonna take that approach. I tried to like, just like kind of let it roll. You know, it's been a long time like fighting. For me, like 15 years, and you know, you want there to be like some sort of resolution. And hopefully this will be a step in the right direction, because when you fight, you don't just fight for yourself, you fight for everybody, right? So I really hope that there will be resolution for some people in this. And you know, that's kind of like the state of affairs. So yeah, encourage your legislators to vote yes on Senate Bill 1511, but let them know, man, that include everybody. Let's take the next steps, you know, even if it's in the next session.
I love it. We are keeping it contemporary in season two. I'm loving the evolution of the show, because before we were talking about like conceptual ideas that help people understand the experience. And if you listened, now our show is densified. Like, these are things happening in the last week. And yeah, you can have a role today. What is the website, Blue? Is like right Senate now or?
Well, you can go on stillinprison.org.
That's the one.
And you can send a letter to your legislator through there. I've written a letter to every single legislator and everybody on the Judiciary Committee. It doesn't take too long to share your own personal thoughts. And I know it can be difficult when you don't know all of the information. But if you watch the little ad on stillinprison.org, you'll learn about the entire situation from the 1930s, both here and in
Louisiana. I told you we go full circle, baby.
We're a strange pair, aren't we? But then, you know, speak from that spot and realize that we got to, you know, try to get as much.
You're tuned in to listener support.